powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Joining us now on the Issaquah Pest Control Hotline, it's Fox Sports and MLB Network insider John Morosi. Hey, John, how are you?
Stacy and Jake, how are you? Great to be with you in the great city of Seattle today.
Oh, good. Now, we have plenty of questions, unsurprisingly. Before I say anything, I hear you're doing some kitchen work because Jake just redid his.
By that I meant I had to make sure that when my wife got home from working at the hospital that it was that the kitchen was presentable. We have three daughters, as you can imagine, trying to do my work and virtual learning with three kids under the age of nine. The kitchen is not quite like HGTV for her by the time it gets home, so I just have to make sure that it's like 80 or 90% of the way there just to make sure that my wife as a physician is happy when she gets home.
John, that is great stuff. It is showing love by action, right?
That's right. That's the whole thing about the love language is all that stuff. Yes, I've studied that stuff.
Acts of service.
It's all very valid.
I'm with you, brother. I've been there, done that, and I've also been on the other receiving end where I forget to do that, and my wife comes home and says, what the heck's going on here? So smart man, John, smart man. We appreciate you coming on with us. I mean, there's really not a whole lot of baseball conversation here in Seattle, John. Tell us what the heck you thought of what transpired with Kevin Mather and what is, the fallout from that and just your overall impressions.
Going on there, obviously, and I think a couple things. Number one, Mather's resignation and obviously what he said underscores something that has been an issue for this team for a while, which is when you really think about it, as we're getting ready to celebrate, of course, the 20th anniversary of the 0-1 team, this franchise has not had a sustainable winning culture, obviously, since Pat Gillick stepped down as the GM nearly 20 years ago. They have never been able to find it. And this should be a very clear indication to ownership that they have to find a winning culture. They have to develop it a lot better than they have because clearly the problem did not start with Mather's comments, but that they sort of illuminated what has been an issue. And that's why I think as they look at the potential hirings for the new president role, whenever that's going to be, they need to make sure that they set the right tone with this person who comes in, whether it's a Theo Epstein or a Kenny Williams or a Chris Antonetti. It has to be somebody with a long track record in this game of winning and of developing a strong culture. This team needs culture, clearly. I think also the other part of it, and where I think the Mather comments were so startling, is that on many levels, setting aside the Kalnick conversation for the moment from the standpoint of the contract, the farm system is in quite good shape. And I think that the way that Kevin was speaking about the players, I thought was just very tone deaf with respect to the actual progress that's occurred. There actually are some very good stories there to be told. And it's sad to me that the president of the club was choosing even whether the venue was the Bellevue Club or your radio station, that he would choose to harp on the negative when, in fact, there is a tremendous amount of positive things to talk about with this particular franchise.
Hey, John, speaking of Theo, I think that a lot of fans, Mariners fans, are kind of really hoping, first of all, for an outside hire, someone to kind of rejuvenate this organization that's just dying to get back into the postseason. How much of a long shot is that?
I think, Stacy, that it maybe is, certainly it's not like a better than 50-50 chance, but I think this, that first of all, Theo, as you know, is currently with the commissioner's office and doing a great job to help, I think, the people at the commissioner's office think in great depth about the state of the game. Of course, we know there's a CBA negotiation coming up. That's part of his work. He is such a thoughtful person when it comes to making the game as diverse and inclusive as it can be. So I think his voice is very important there. And as someone who cares about the game, I love the fact that he's involved in the commissioner's office right now because there's a lot of really important conversations happening. I also think that if you were to imagine a scenario in which Theo would be comfortable leaving now the commissioner's office and starting over, it would look a lot like what the Mariners look like. It would look like a team that hasn't won in forever. It would look like a team that has a base of young talent like Kelnick and Rodriguez and Gilbert to be involved in. It would be in a very appealing world-class city, which Seattle is. And if he could get involved potentially, and Theo, I think, has hinted at this in the past, maybe not explicitly, but I think it would maybe be in a partial ownership stake, whatever it would be, it would have to be a tremendous opportunity all the way around that involves some equity, both emotionally and probably financially, in the overall success of the enterprise. But I think, Stacey, to your question, the Mariners, while I don't want to get anybody's hopes up here because I think we're a long way from this being a legitimate conversation, I do think the Mariners' situation, both because of the city, the drought in winning, of course they've never won a World Series there, they've never been in one, those kinds of things I think would appeal to Theo in the same way that the Cubs did from a generational standpoint.
Now, you certainly
You're already
did.
Getting fans excited, John.
You already did it. You already did
it. The cart's rolling downhill.
I'm trying to be as genuine as I can be.
Well, I appreciate that. My hand is shaking thanks to you. Now I think we've got a legit shot at Theo. But, John, in all seriousness, you do mention one of those star players in Jared Kelnick. And in the USA Today, gave a pretty explosive exclusive to them talking about how he really feels like his service time situation is being manipulated, and that if he had taken the contract offer that they were putting out there, that he would be playing with the major league club, much like Evan White did for the Mariners this past season. Where do you stand on this in terms of service time manipulation and Jared Kelnick's particular situation?
Well, a couple of things. Number one, if the offer was made with the explicit rider on it that says if you sign this you will be a major league player, if you don't then you won't be, that's obviously troubling if that was the way that it was presented to him. And obviously between Brody Schofield and Jared, they have both made comments to that effect to Bob Nightingale. I would say separate to that, that when you look at the Fernando Tatis Jr. deal, okay, he just signs this massive contract with the Padres, and what did they do 2 years ago? They had him on the club on opening day. And they now, 2 years later, have an agreement that was mutually beneficial to both sides. Yes, it was more than $300 million. It's a huge amount of money to commit to a player. But you could tell Tatis was happy about the deal. And I think the roots in that go back to how they handled him at the outset. That's really important. So, again, this gets back to the conversation about culture. You want to be a team where players say, yes, great experience there. Front office treated me great. I was paid fairly. I was approached respectfully with this deal. I signed it, and I'm happy there. You want to be that kind of a club. That being said, the CBA, as it's written right now and has been for a while, has some disincentives to put a player in the major leagues on opening day. That's been the case for a while. Now you look at the example of Chris Bryant. He was called up a couple weeks into the season in 2015, And there was a lot of rancor about it that particular spring about what the right thing to do would have been. But I remember I covered the game when they clinched the playoff berth in September of 2015, and I do recall there was not a lot of conversation about Chris Bryant's service time at that point in time because they won. And when you win, certain amounts of things are forgiven. Again, part of the culture there was very strong, and I think despite the way things were handled with the contract and with not coming up until later in April, there was very strong communication with Theo, and he created the right culture there, the framework for there to ultimately be a lot of success. So I think how you do it is crucially important, and I think a lot of these things, Jake and Stacey, have to be dealt with in the next round of CBA talks as the year goes along.
You are listening to Jake and Stacey, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross here. We're speaking with Fox Sports and MLB Network insider John Morosi. John, we've already touched on it a bit in the course of our conversation with you, but just want to kind of start at the outlook for Major League Baseball as a whole because of Mather's comments. What I can't figure out, and you obviously know significantly more, so I'm hoping you can offer some insight here, is what the more longer-reaching tentacles will be. Is this something that's going to make a real difference, whether it be with grievances filed or with CBA negotiations, or is this just another drop in what feels like kind of a poisoned well?
Well, Stacey, that's an excellent question. And I think that it really speaks to where the game is right now. Here we are a month or so away from opening day. Certainly there's a lot of emotions. There is some optimism, of course, about just being able to play a full season and how grateful we are for that possibility. And it is unfortunate that at a time when there is a lot of optimism in a lot of places, that this conversation and Kevin Mather's comments have been a dominant story in the sport this week. That is obviously not what those of us who love the game want to be the case. That being said, it has brought out, obviously, as unfortunate and misguided as the comments were, it has brought to the forefront an issue that has to be dealt with. And I think Gerrit Cole, other players have basically said, we now have a clear example of what we have to talk about. This is brought to the forefront from a standpoint of the collective bargaining situation, issues that we have to deal with. And I think that there could be, let's hope, some positive conversation that emerges from these very troubling comments. And one suggestion that I would have, if I ever were to have the ear of the people that are involved in this, is you think about the example of hockey. And, of course, we're all excited for the Kraken to be arriving in the fall, of course. In the NHL, contracts are handled based on age at signing, and there's an age-related free agency on your rookie contract, if you will. So what I would frankly like to see happen is if you sign your contract before the age of 20, so basically if you're a high school drafted player or an international free agent who signs at 16, 17, you become a free agent at, pick an age, 26. And if you sign above the age of 20, your first contract, you become a free agent after your age 27 season. Period. That's it. It's a mathematical age-related free agency, and that eliminates any of these incentives that have existed. And again, the Mariners are not the only team that has dealt with decisions like this. That they occur to varying levels all across the league. And the only way that you get rid of it is if you remove the incentive and if you go strictly with age. And I hope that is part of the conversation in the months ahead.
It's an interesting suggestion, John. Certainly have not heard that one. One of the key things that we're also looking at here in Seattle here, John, and I guess concerns is, number one, my first question for you is, can Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais, are these guys the right guys to get them through this? They've been, in my opinion, I have been really happy with what they've done through this rebuilding process. I felt like they have built up a lot of great momentum. Then you have Kevin Mather's comments, and it makes you fearful that it really sets them back. Do you believe that is the case?
I still think that it can work with Jerry and Scott Servais. I do, but where it has to really work is on the person-to-person level. What I would like to know, and this kind of gets to where it's so unique for us as journalists and broadcasters now, not being able to be in the clubhouse, so to speak, and get the vibe of things, and you're not really able to have as much access as you normally would at this time of year. The question, and while obviously the relationship between Kelnick and Mather would not be good at this moment, and that's important, but it is not as important as his relationship with DePoto and his relationship with Scott Servais right now. And if Jerry DePoto and Scott are having some very in-depth, honest, genuine conversations with Jared Kelnick, this can be fixed. I believe it can be fixed because, as I said off the top of the show, our segment, a lot of the momentum with the player development here is real. There is some legitimate talent. People around the game know the Mariners have very talented players. So if the conversation person to person is good, and if the communication is robust and honest, this whole situation is salvageable. But this is where this really comes down to what is said in those rooms, what is said person to person from a standpoint of leadership, and how you develop the culture. It's hard for us to ascertain it right now without being in the clubhouse, and who knows when that's going to change, but this becomes essential. This is where I think, as a leader and as a communicator, Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais, their legacies will be judged on what they do in the next 2 to 3 weeks.
John, so then my second question, the other fear is that they go through 2021, they take all the right necessary steps within their own system, and now it's time for them to dip their toe in the water in free agency and to really go for it. Now you're going after these high-priced free agents to round out your roster and really start competing. How difficult will it be for them to recruit top-level talent here to Seattle? Will it be based off of those same personal relationships, or will players be influenced by the next hire at the president level for the Mariners?
Well, that's an excellent question too, Jake, and that to me is one of the really important decisions before the Mariners. And that is where I think if I'm John Stanton right now and I am thinking about who I want the president of my club to be, it is when the Mariners delegation lands to make a pitch to Francisco Lindor or Carlos Correa, whoever it might be, name your superstar free agent, shortstop, whoever the position is, Trevor Story, you name it, there's a great amount of players available in a year. When that plane lands and the door of the player's house opens and the family is there to meet the Mariners, who do you want to be the first person that steps through the door? I think we would say that Theo would be a wonderful person to have be that person, but he's not the only great person who can set a culture. I think there's a tremendous amount of men and women across the game who'd be a wonderful person to step through that door, but they have to make sure that as John Stanton thinks about this, that his team is going to be judged on the first person that steps through that door. Who is that going to be? And what are they going to say about the culture they're trying to develop in Seattle? And that's where your reputation in the game. Listen, I love Seattle. I live there for a year. I have family there. It's an extraordinary place. We all realize geographically there are some players who live in Florida who are not going to want to necessarily cross the country all the time. And so you're going to have to tailor your sales pitch in a very particular way. And the way that you might override the distance is, again, with here's the roster we're selling, here's the culture we have, here's the manager that you're going to love playing for, and here's who we are as a team. And I think clearly Kevin Mather did not stand for the right things, and they have to find somebody who does.
He is John Morosi. John, it has been such a pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us. Hey, tell me that when the Kraken get underway here, we can bring you back to talk some hockey too.
Love it. So,
yes.
I of course, MLB Network and NHL Network for me. I love both sports equally. I cannot wait. I lived in Belltown. Now it's like 16 years ago. For 1 year, they're writing for the PI, and I would be able to walk up there to go to Sonics games, and I cannot imagine how exciting it'll be to see a hockey game there. So it's a beautiful city, a lot of family there we love, so I can't wait to get back out there again soon.
Awesome. We're holding you to that one. We can't wait. All right. Thanks so much, John.
I promise. And I can't wait for the Huskies to come here and play U of M there in the
there
fall
you go.
Here in Ann Arbor. That'll be exciting, too.
All right.
Thanks so much for coming on, John. Appreciate you.
Have a good one. All right. It is 12:15. That means it's time for Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Mac and Jack's African Amber Ale.
With Jake and Stacy.
We live for moments like this. Time for us to step up and take it.
Question one, Jake, do you believe John Schneider is legitimately listening to trade offers from around the NFL and Russell Wilson?
I would be shocked if he's legitimately listening, but there was that comment that was made by Mike Silver that has me thinking, and here's the deal. There's a difference between taking the conversation, being nice, and hearing that conversation out versus actually being interested. If the Seahawks are actually interested in fielding calls and saying, if you start with three first-round picks, now I'm interested, now I'm leaning into this conversation, I feel like we're in very dangerous, murky waters that I don't like at all. And I would hope that John Schneider and the front office is not legitimately listening to trade offers at this point in time, and that this is all talk, and we can move on and start focusing on winning football games here next season. So I would like to believe that he is not legitimately listening, but is fielding calls out of respect.
Second down. Stacy.
Curtis. Hot soup.
Hot soup.
It doesn't make sense to anyone. Can I also say, for anyone watching the video stream on 710sports.com, anytime a guest comes on and says, that's a good question, we have an ongoing competition between Jake and I that we like celebrate. And I thought that I was doing such a great job when Morosi told me that's a great question, Stacy.
Then later on, John Morosi said, I had an excellent.
Excellent.
Excellent question.
It doesn't get much
so
better than
upset.
That.
I really don't think so.
Devastated. What's the question, Curtis?
Stacy, can we get a health update on the Seahawks defense? Get a vibe check.
Great
Where's
question,
your level
Curtis.
Of concern?
Vibe check. It isn't incredibly high, but I do think that re-examining this group, there are some injuries that we're going to be watching. For instance, LJ Collier told Good Morning Football this morning he had his ankle scoped. He said he's fine, but he is in a boot. Quentin Dunbar ended the season on the injured reserve with a knee injury. We obviously aren't sure, kind of the latest update with that. Don't forget Jamal Adams had surgery for those broken fingers, dealt with injuries to both shoulders. Fans still don't know what you have with Daryl Taylor at all, since he was never able to make his debut in his recovery from surgery he had in, what, January or so of that year. Marquise Blair with an ACL. So, look, there's a lot of injuries to track with this defense. There is good news. This is the good news. Time is on your side with recovery. You still have the entire offseason to see how these guys are coming along. The two good updates, I guess you could say, would be, first of all, I guess three, LJ Collier telling Good Morning Football that he feels great. Daryl Taylor was on track to make a debut in the playoffs. Would the Seahawks have advanced? And thirdly, at the end of the season, Pete Carroll did say that Marquise Blair is on the right timeline with his recovery. So there's some good news.
Third down. Jake, what is the new trend from NFL players that organizations are not happy about?
The fact that players feel the need to post pictures of them pre-operation, that they're going into surgery and that they're telling the world that, hey, these are the injuries that I've sustained, here's what's going on, and here's the off-season surgery that I am doing. NFL teams don't like this. They don't like this new trend that players are doing. It's just one of those things where they try to do what they can to protect the team and to protect the individual, to not disclose injuries and what type of injuries there are. And players are becoming more and more open sharing what they're going through with a given year. And it also kind of shows how brutal the sport is, just how many guys are playing through legitimate injuries that have to get fixed in the offseason. Pretty crazy stuff.
Fourth down. What should be the expectation for LJ Collier heading into the 2021 season?
Well, LJ Collier was on with Good Morning America, or not Good Morning America.
Maybe,
but
what it was. Good Morning Football.
Good Morning
What's
Football.
What's he doing with same thing? Hands.
Why were you looking at me when you were like trying to be like one-upping me?
Robin
when you didn't
Roberts.
Even land it.
Who else is on Good Morning America?
That's a good question.
Laura
is
Spencer?
Is it a good question? It's not.
It's a good question.
No, but he was talking about how he was going to become a Pro Bowler this year. That was his goal, that he was really going to turn it up this year, and that he felt great going into year two, really gained some confidence, and feels like this next year is going to be a big year for him. Also said that the defense is going to be the number one defense in the league. I think we're in that offseason hype, confident mode right now if you're most players in the league. But I think the reasonable expectation for Collier, he had 22 total tackles. He had 3 sacks and 4 tackles for loss this last season. What I would hope for in terms of LJ Collier's production is to bump his total up to 30, 35 total tackles, for him to have 5 sacks, and maybe increase your TFLs to, you know, 6 or 8. That would, to me, would be a massive increase and a step in the right direction where you could feel really good about LJ Collier's contribution. I do not think that he will be a Pro Bowler based off of what I've seen. But, hey, if he's shooting for it and he can make it happen, it would be a huge, huge boost to this team.
Now, we're going to have Hype Train later today, where I'm going to ask all of us to weigh in on the biggest trends. Tell me what you guys just agree or disagree right now with my way too early hot take. Daryl Taylor, biggest surprise in a positive way for the Seahawks in 2021.
I like it.
Biggest breakout star.
I would hope so. I mean,
are you buying it, though?
Am I buying it? No.
It doesn't have to be a new star. It could just be a veteran that has a great year, too. So it could be like Quandre Diggs has his best career year.
I'll let the Daryl Taylor train go by. But am I hoping against it? No, I would love it for him to be like the breakout star of the 2021 Seahawks.
I think it would be huge, especially if you had Dunlap next to him, like you said. The other person that I think could be a really major breakout star could be Jordan Brooks. The way that he played at the end of the year was very, very encouraging. And I believe that that is a huge part of it to me, that I think that you can look into this year and how much percentage of the snaps that he plays from the very get-go. I really believe that you could see Jordan Brooks really take off and become one of the best young linebackers in the league. So Daryl Taylor and Jordan Brooks are, I think, are two very, very good guesses. And I would love for either one of those two guys to prove us right.
All right. J.J. Watt has us going all True Detective, trying to decipher his tweets and see where he's going to land. Plus, an NFL coach covered the tab for an entire restaurant. I'll tell you who it is next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacy.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacy. Read you some fun stories from today, top stories from today. I'm going to start with one, actually, I didn't get to yesterday, which was a story shared, Cam Newton sharing a story about Percy Harvin's legendary playmaking ability from their days at Florida. Cut number 9 here.
But I was in Florida, and I'm on the sideline. I'm literally, Dan Mullen was offensive coordinator, Herb head coach, and I'm literally seeing, like, we needed a spark. And I had the luxury of having the headphones. It was a live headphone. And you hear all the coaches talking. Long story short, they said, man, we need to get Percy the ball. So Coach Mullen, bro, they literally coached him up on the sideline and say, you're going to come in, take a snap, and but you're going to go. It's like a misdirection.
They drew this up in the dirt.
On the sideline. And 80 yards later, versus LSU. Like, yeah. LSU, like, this ain't no Miami Tech. This ain't no DeVry. University of Phoenix.
He said the Brock.
Like, ITT Tech. This is real dogs that he's going against.
What did DeVry do to be dragged into this conversation? DeVry is innocent, Jake. Innocent. But still, lots of great stories about Percy Harvin, that one being the latest.
It's a great story, and Percy Harvin was one of the true legends in college football. Like, when you talk about players that, I mean, changed the game, or that they, when they were in college, they were completely electric. Reggie Bush will always be number one. I mean, to me, he was the greatest college football player to ever play. He was unbelievable. But Percy Harvin, in his time at Florida, man, he was special. And obviously, we know Percy was dealing with a lot of issues physically, mentally, especially when he got into the league, it manifested itself even more. But that guy, if he could have stayed healthy, man, it makes you wonder. They signed this big deal with Percy Harvin here in Seattle, what he could have produced, what he could have been, had he been able to stay healthy, and there would have been a lot of fun, electric moments that we could be looking back on right now.
Let's talk conspiracy theory, shall we? J.J. Watt, now a free agent after being released by the Houston Texans, and what was reportedly a mutual decision, though J.J. Watt, Let's be real. He wanted to get the heck out of there. Tweeted the other day, quote, mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell. Very benign tweet, very random tweet, except that, guess what? That tweet now has almost 200,000 likes, over 4,000 quote tweets, and almost 17,000 retweets. And I'll tell you why. Because people are on their conspiracy theory bandwagons figuring out what the heck that might mean. And you know what, Jake? I think I've been convinced of one of them. I think I have. Buffalo Bills currently the fourth kind of favorite, not the odds on favorite, but fourth to land J.J. Watt. Mitochondria, same number of letters as Buffalo Bills. Tell me what you think of that. I think it's too weird a coincidence to just be chance, Jake.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I'm sorry. I think that's kind of a stretch. I don't know if I could get on board with you there. I don't think that's going to be... I've heard some better ones. I've heard some better ones out there. I don't know if that's going to lead to the Buffalo Bills. Curtis, are you buying that?
Normally, I think with my third eye open, but this one may be a little too out there.
Well, Curtis, how about this?
Okay.
How about this?
I'm
because
all for conspiracy
another
theories.
Thing you need to know is that the Mitochondria Research Society, located in Buffalo.
Whoa, okay. Now that.
Okay,
now we're talking.
Open that third eye a little bit wider because now you're wide awake.
Yeah. I mean.
Is this true?
Teach these devils.
This is a fact.
Wait, hold on.
A fact that clearly J.J. Watt knows. I'm not making this up. This is a fact, Jake. The Mitochondria Research Society is in Buffalo, New York, USA.
Uh-oh.
Also a team where a place where the Buffalo Bills reside.
Can confirm.
I don't know, Jake.
Here's
the pieces are starting to land a bit too quickly.
Here's Christian,
Christian the lawman. Christian the Lawman says mitochondria equals germs, which equals the Seahawks didn't have any COVID germ outbreaks, so that means he's coming here to Seattle.
First of all, Jake, it is a virus, not bacteria. So you and Christian are wrong.
Wow.
Yeah. Just saying. I mean, that's, I shut that down pretty quickly. Also, Christian, I know that you're a Browns fan. I know what you're trying to do here. He's trying to throw him off the Bills track, but nope. Just know, my fellow third eye openers, that this is J.J. Watt laying the tracks here so that we all know what's up in the future. Okay, that's all I'm saying, Jake. Okay. Jake's just checked out of my theories, but I got a couple more. I'm not going to get to them right now. I got to workshop them a little bit, but I'm just saying.
I'll say that Buffalo. That Buffalo one is pretty good.
My theory might be weird. It's the internet's theory that I'm latching onto, but there is one person between the three of us that was questioning the moon landing the other day, and his name
was
Snake Schmeeps.
I was okay, not. Okay. I was just saying that there are a lot of people out there that do question it. There are conspiracy theorists out there. And if we had one thing to be able to put to rest, to put to bed, I would love to be able to put that conspiracy to rest.
Do-gooder of the day award goes to John Harbaugh. He was out at Jimmy Seafood restaurant in Baltimore the other day and broke out his wallet, this from TMZ, and paid for dinner for the entire restaurant.
I mean,
thanks, John.
I wish I was there for that moment to get that free meal. That would be pretty cool. Hats off to John Harbaugh for continuing to add to the legendary status that he already has in Baltimore. Now, Stacey, you asked the question in show prep with this news of what was the nicest thing that you have ever done for somebody else?
I sure did.
Man, that's a really tough question.
What is the nicest thing you've ever
because
done?
Because I've done so many nice things over the years, it's really hard to point out. But, you know, John Morosi really spoke to me as he's talking about love language and trying to make sure that the house is clean. So that will be one of the goals over the next couple days is to clean the house so when my wife comes back home, she'll think I'm the best because I clean the house. We'll see. We'll see if that actually ends up happening or not.
Let's not forget, in the sports bet, I said you should do something nice for Brooke or clean the kitchen. You went,
Well, I mean, it's a tough task, so I'll get it done. I'm just kidding.
Curtis, what's the nicest thing you've ever done for anyone where you were like, wow, pat my back. That was your Harbaugh moment.
I mean,
the tab, by
should
the way,
we be bragging about stuff like this? Like,
no, that's I mean, it's in bad taste, but poor taste, but here we are doing it right now, and I asked you.
Nicest thing I've ever done for somebody?
Yeah.
I've done.
You ever covered
nice
a tab
things
for someone behind you? Like how sometimes people do that at Starbucks?
That, yeah.
Who'd you do it for?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Oh, you did it at Starbucks. Like you were like,
no,
I'm paying
for the guy
behind me.
No, not at Starbucks, but at like another place, like a McDonald's or something.
I've always wondered because I've done that thing. They'll do it at Starbucks sometimes and they'll be like, oh, there's this train, you know, going where people are paying for the person behind them. What happens when you go up and you're like, okay, I'll play along.
Or you stop
McDonald's
the train?
No. Well, first of all,
it ends with me.
I think I know where this is going.
What happens if you go up and you're like, yeah, sure, I'll get it for the person behind me. What happens if they've got like a minivan full of people?
Yeah, and like $100.
Exactly.
Charged.
And they're like, yeah, no problem. Okay, their total is $89.95. Is that when you're like,
maybe I'll cover for like a quarter of that? Can you do that?
Can I just pay for mine? Yeah. I just get their first drink?
I would just drive away.
You don't even pay. Just leave. Go away at that point. Oh, guys. Well, that'll do it for the timeline today. Oh, I have one more here. I forgot Mr. Met's involved. Taiwan Walker forced to choose number 99 with the Mets because the mascot, Mr. Met, one of my favorite mascots in sports for one reason, wears number 00.
So. That was the other number Taiwan wanted.
Exactly. So we can't take it now.
All because of the mascot.
Mr. Met ruins a lot of things.
He can't
for a
buy
lot of
out
people.
The mascot. He
I don't
can't
think
try.
So.
He can't try and negotiate with the mascot.
You could almost certainly slip Mr. Met $20, and I bet he would give up that number.
I don't think so. I
think Mr. Met can be bought, and I'll say that right here.
See, if anybody tried to go to the Blitz and say, hey, I want to buy number 00, which is the number he wears, I think that he would hold out for millions of dollars. I don't know if you would even change it for that point. I mean, you talk about the brand recognition there. It is... astronomical. It is completely different than just a player, right? No?
Mr. Met will be there. He was there before Taiwan Walker was there, and he'll be there after Taiwan Walker is there.
In the end of the world, when the only thing roaming the earth is a single tumbleweed, the only other thing on the planet will be Mr. Met.
With his weird kind of smile.
Who will outlast all of us.
And one Mets fan that will just heckle that mascot for being terrible.
Now, I said that there was a current Seahawks player who was asked about the Russell Wilson rumor, says he's not buying any of it. We'll tell you who it is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Jake, you want to know what I think?
Yeah.
I mean, not a lot of people do, but do you want to know what I think right now?
Of course. And lots of people want to know what you think.
My mom, one of them. One of them. My sister also. And you. I think that if Russell Wilson had won two more rings with this franchise, certainly three, which would be an unprecedented stretch of success, we would not be hearing any fans complaining about what he said. I think a lot of the feedback that we're seeing, which has gone from like, hey, I don't love that he said that publicly, to just straight up like, Russell Wilson is a bad quarterback, get him away, which is like, I don't know how you got there. I mean, I can understand the first point. When you jump to that second conclusion of, and also he's a bad quarterback, I'm not meeting you halfway on that one. I think that a lot of that also is because there's enough there for people to point to and say, I don't know if he's good enough to be demanding this. If he says he wants what Tom Brady has, well, what have you given fans that's like Tom Brady? If you say you want to be able to act like Aaron Rodgers, well, Aaron Rodgers has an MVP and has played lights out for years. If you want to say that you want what Peyton Manning did, being able to audible into whatever you want at the line of scrimmage, well, that's Peyton Manning. He's a Hall of Famer. And so I think that there are just so many examples people point to and they say, you want to be treated like the best? Well, you know, where's the resume to back it up? I may or may not agree with any of that. I think Russell Wilson, and this is kind of where I am trying to have like a stronger kind of defense against what Russell Wilson has said, because I do think that there's a difference there. But who are you as a team if he leaves, if you don't have him as your quarterback? Where are you gonna fill that in? Do you know how hard it is to find a franchise quarterback, especially a good franchise quarterback? Do you want to win a Super Bowl or not?
Well, I mean, yeah, but also to those people that would point that out. And again, I also don't think that this is a large majority of people that say this, by the way. I think that there is a loud certain group that says those things. And I think that there is a large majority of people that look at this situation and say either, hey, you're blowing a lot of smoke and this is no big deal and nothing's going to happen out of this, or that the other side sees it and says, look, no matter whether I liked or disliked the comments, we know that Russell Wilson has to stay in town and that he is our best shot at getting to a Super Bowl. Now, what I would say is that for any of those detractors from those conversations, I think you got a fair thing to point at. But the other part I would point to is I don't think at any point in time any of those players ever had a question of, has this team truly number one focus and priority is building around that quarterback? And the answer would be no, it never was in doubt, never was in question. All those franchises absolutely with the first thing in mind had been earlier in their career, middle of their career, had been about establishing what is around that quarterback. Peyton Manning, what is around Peyton Manning? What is around Tom Brady? Not in the first iteration of their Super Bowl run, because it was mostly focused around the defense. But then the second half of Tom Brady's career, it certainly was Tom Brady first and foremost. Aaron Rodgers stepped into that situation. Patrick Mahomes steps into that situation. So I think there's a lot of conversation to be had there. But overall, the simple fact is that your franchise, the Seattle Seahawks, have determined that Russell Wilson is that player. That's why you pay him $35 million, is it not? Because if not, then what are we doing? We're just wasting time or wasting money, right?
Well, yeah.
So I mean, so to me,
if you're paying him that much money, you're not going to have money to have, at least via free agency, like the defense you would want. For instance, you can draft guys for significantly less money and build up that defense, but they haven't been able to do that.
Right. So I think that is the part that, to me, as I look for what is the best path forward, I think it's pretty easy and pretty clear. Now, there, I think that there has been some friction between Russell Wilson, Pete Carroll, and John Schneider very clearly because they see things differently in terms of the path to get there. And hopefully that can get resolved. Hopefully that they can get on the same page and stop bickering back and forth and seeing it play out in the public eye. I think we would all love for that to be the case.
Man,
I don't know how that is going to ultimately come together. But Stacey, when you point out those other players, they had MVPs, Super Bowls, but that's what this is about. It's about getting to that point. Does everybody in Seattle not want to see another Super Bowl here? Do we not want that level of success? Or are we just sitting here going, okay, we're treading water, we're happy with 10 wins, like, hey, I'm good. As long as we get to the playoffs and we have an early exit in the wild card, like, no complaints from me. And if that's it, that's it for you, cool. I don't hold that against you, because there's a lot of teams that would be envious of that situation in the NFL. That's just not me. I want to see this team that I believe has the talent, has the ability, has the stability from top down as a structure to be able to capitalize that and win Super Bowls. And you have to take that next step. And that, to me, is where this conversation comes to, is what is the best way to get there? If you were more talented from a defensive perspective, I would say go in all in on the defense and invest in the defense. But that's not where I truly believe your best assets lie. It's on the offensive side of the ball. So how are we going to make that better? And that, to me, is the biggest question heading into this year, because we know relatively what the defense is going to look like from a roster construction standpoint.
I mentioned that there was a player who wasn't buying into those rumors. Cut number five, this is LJ Collier from Good Morning Football this morning, asked about Russell Wilson's comments.
Not buying it at all. Russ is Seattle, man. He's our quarterback. He's a winner, man. I'm not buying it. I think they're going to do what they need to do. And Russ is going to be our quarterback for years to come, man. I don't see him going anywhere. He's a great guy. He's our leader, man. He's our quarterback. I don't see anybody being in the center for a while. So, yeah, that's my take on it.
I hope that's the case. Look, whatever your feelings are about either who you think Russell Wilson is, maybe you don't like a big kind of celebrity player. That's your prerogative. Maybe you don't like that he openly made comments. Also your prerogative. Totally fair. It's just interesting to me that we've been having a conversation for the last 48 hours, essentially, about the Seattle Mariners. I love the Mariners. I grew up here. But every time I have a conversation with the Mariners, it eventually leads to, like, okay, how do you get back? How do you get back in this? Like, these are all the places that this team has misstepped over the last two decades. And here you have a team, the Seattle Seahawks, that have the most important piece to be a winning franchise and need a couple pieces to be a legitimate Super Bowl contender. Don't get me wrong. They're not. They need more pieces. It's weird to me that fans, Seattle sports fans, are so eager to ship the quarterback out. Why? Because he made comments you don't like?
That you all agree with before he made those comments?
Well, I think it's because people say, okay, well, if you're going to point and call the kettle black, you better make sure that you're also totally clean of any responsibility. And so I think what people were pointing to is, well, Russell Wilson's pointing to the offensive line and saying, I could use better protection. Meanwhile, he's taking on some of his own sacks. He's hanging on to the ball. Oh, and you had an awful second half to the season. In fact, I think if Russell Wilson's 2020 season had been flipped, you wouldn't even be hearing this much feedback. The fact that you ended the season on a pretty bad note yourself is also part of that.
And I fully agree with that. And I think with any high-level athlete, you look at what happened, just like what Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson did in the Super Bowl in 2014. They took the play for what it was and then moved on and tried to move on. And if Russell Wilson's going to sit there in the back and look at the second half of the season and say, look, I'm not going to advocate for change. I'm just going to sit back and take whatever happens. And if I go through another year with bad protection up front because of the style of acquisitions that have happened yet again, and I just sit back and go with the flow because I didn't play well in the second half, I don't think that would be positive either. I think that you have a player that's looking at it and saying, hey, I know that I have a responsibility in the way things happened in the second half of the season. I want to improve. I want to move forward. But I also think that there is one glaring situation that we need to address so that I can try to be the best version of myself as well. And so I think that that is all part of the conversation. It is a multi-layered conversation, no question. And I don't think there's been anybody that has sat there and said, not one person is void of blame in the conversation, but are you working towards the solution? And I believe that they did that with the offensive coordinator hire. Now, let's work towards the solution as to offensive line protection and how to make this group as best as possible so that you can capitalize on the talent that you have with your $35 million investment. I think that that is the most critical aspect of this when you talk about it from a roster construction standpoint, or as like I said before, what are you doing? Why would you make that investment if you're not going to try and maximize it as much as possible?
All right. Well, quarterback might be the biggest piece of that, but there are a lot of other important conversations that need to happen about potentially departing free agents. We've examined a couple of them so far. Chris Carson, KJ Wright, Benson Mayoa. Our profiles continue today. Next, with running back Carlos Hyde.